This is the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. I'm Jeffrey Riley. The stories of women breaking into fields once reserved just for men and paying a high price are from years ago, right? You know the answer is no. Mistreatment of women in male-dominated fields continues, and a recent book demonstrates. The book is Troublemaker, a memoir of sexism, retaliation, and the fight they didn't see coming by Lisa Cornwell. Lisa spent 7 years reporting and hosting on air for the Golf Channel. That's all detailed in the book. Lisa's a golfer herself, a four-time Arkansas women's state golf champion. The book is written with journalist Tucker Booth. Lisa Cornwell is our guest. Lisa, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
I'm very glad to be with you, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Talk about the why. Why did you speak out and file complaints when you knew it would essentially end your career as you knew it?
I didn't know to do anything else. I've never been one to back away from something that's difficult like this in terms of using your voice and using your opinion, using whatever you have to try to make it better. And after all that I had been on the Golf Channel, there's no way that I could stay silent about it. I had to while my contract was still in effect. Part of the clauses, you know, toward the end were basically you can't speak out about the company and just different things. You can't air your grievances publicly. And I knew that first day that I was out of the contract that I wanted to go forward with it. Because like we say in the book, and we use a very perfect quote, silence does nothing but perpetuate this problem. And so I wanted to try to do something about it and put a stop to it. I wanted to name names. And that's exactly what we did, not just, you know, with that initial tweet, but really with the book. And I'm very glad every single day. I don't regret it one minute.
I should sketch this out a little more for some people who might not be familiar with the Golf Channel. It is not a small operation. It's part of NBC Universal.
It is. And it's gotten a little bit smaller over the years. But that's a different story altogether with the way NBC's handled Golf Channel. And what we try to make really clear, very clear, is that this is not a golf book. There are a lot of references to golf because, as you mentioned, I mean, I have this lengthy background in the sport and my job was covering the game. But this is really a book that relates to everyone. I mean, whether you're a woman who's been through it, a minority who's been through it, a man who's been through it because of ageism or whatever, it affects everybody. I mean, even if you haven't personally been impacted by it, we all know somebody who has. And so I think that it's a very relatable story and an important story in terms of trying to make things better where we are right now in 2023. And it's still a very, very much an ongoing issue. But you're right, NBC's had these problems in the past. They've talked about it publicly. It's been in the news cycle. But you usually hear about like Matt Lauer or Chris Matthews where it involves more sexual harassment. And I wanted this out there because this probably occurs a lot more often. And it's just discrimination and retaliation that's still present, unfortunately.
So let's talk about your sense of justice and a story that helps illustrate that, because you point out in the book that when you were a freshman in college, you intervened in violence with a 3-iron.
It has been, I think, the favorite chapter of the folks that I've talked to, just because how many times do we see, whether it's on the news or however we get our information, somebody who's been in a subway where there is some sort of attack taking place. And instead of doing something about it and stepping in and trying to stop whatever is happening, they pick up their phone and video it. Well, this happened when I was a freshman in college, and it was well before the smartphones existed. And I'll never forget watching this man just rear back with a closed fist and punch a small girl. And she fell back on the hood of a car so forcefully that it put a dent in the hood of the car. And I looked around and there were 10 to 15 people just watching this happen. And I couldn't believe it. And I just felt this sense of rage that I have to do something about it. And that's when I tell the story about grabbing the 3-iron and going over there and stopping it. I mean, at that point, I knew even though this man was a foot taller and outweighed me by 50 pounds, if I had that 3-iron, especially where I was at that point in my golf career, he didn't stand a chance. And turns out he didn't. So right. the minute that he tried to come after me, I let my 3-iron take over, and thankfully I had it.
Yeah, in the leg, we should point out. You didn't clock him in the head or something. So
I didn't, no.
So you mentioned that there are two takeaways from that, your anger at the bully, but what was the other takeaway?
Just people watching it. Just people unwilling to stop it. And obviously when violence is involved, it's a much bigger story than what I'm speaking about in the book as to what happened to me at Golf Channel. But it still speaks to the fact that people witness these things. And rather than speaking up about it or rather than stepping in and doing the right thing, they just allow it to continue on. And it's why we're still here today. It's why books like Troublemaker need to be written, because long history of this systemic culture, like what we have at work, it obviously has been tolerated. And I tell stories not just about what happened with me. I tell a story about a young woman in her 20s who was like a little sister to me, and to watch her get berated by a veteran on-air male host and literally cuss her out and scream at her. And then the cherry on the top was to tell her that any trained monkey could do her job. Now, I don't even know how those words get in someone's vocabulary, let alone to say it in that manner to somebody else, especially a young, influential person who probably looked up to this man. And when management and our executive producer, Molly Solomon, found out about it, not only did he barely get a slap on the wrist, she wasn't even going to make him apologize. It took a day and a half of her boss, of me, of several other folks, convincing her that she had to make him apologize for this behavior. But I'll tell you this, Jeffrey, he was back on the air that night. And I can't imagine if I had done something like that. I can't imagine what the repercussions, but because of his status level at the network, there was no punishment. And I think that it speaks a lot to, you know, the people who are in charge, right versus wrong. It's not easy to stop this sort of behavior, but it's a lot easier than folks think. I mean, if there are repercussions and retributions for acts like that and behavior like that, you tend to not do it again. But because that hadn't happened at Golf Channel all those years, it kept happening over and over again.
Lisa Cornwell is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Troublemaker, a memoir of sexism, retaliation, and the fight they didn't see coming. Let's get to some of your backstory. You grew up in Arkansas, but you say you didn't know the depths of sexism growing up. How was that not aware to you?
I didn't, and I know it sounds crazy. It's funny because I grew up playing just about every sport that there was, and usually I was playing with guys, and they just treated me like one of them. There was, you know, it was all about just competition and competitiveness, and I was always well-respected as a woman, and I wasn't around it. I mean, I went from playing golf to where I had a lot of success to after college trying to figure out what I was trying to do, and I worked in the restaurant industry, and that didn't have anything close to a discriminatory environment. I mean, people from all walks of life worked in that industry and were all treated fairly and equally. So I really wasn't. And, you know, I grew up in a household too. My mom, as I mentioned in the book, was a longtime surgical nurse. So she would go to work early, and my dad took my sister and me to school every day. He got us breakfast. So I was just around this environment where men and women were equal, and the people who I dealt with always treated me fairly. So you're right. As we say in the book, it took until my 30s or late 20s when I got into the media to really understand how prevalent it still is.
I want to talk about some of the celebrity stories here, because you hung out with a fellow junior golfer named Tiger Woods and got some tips from his dad. There's a funny story about how that connection was made. But the other celebrity story of, you know, many, obviously, is who's your dad's famous cousin?
Bill Clinton.
All right. So we need to hear about why the lights shined on you on the White House lawn one night.
Yeah, that was a big blunder. I had no idea that there were sensors on the grass. So on the north lawn, if you get off the walkway, it detects movement. And I had some friends over. I was staying with Bill and Hillary at the White House, and Bill and I were playing golf that weekend. And I had some friends in town. And so after a day of getting to meet the president in the Oval Office, I mean, they were gracious to have my friends over. Bill invited them back to watch Fight Club that night. So we watched the movie, and he had to go make a call upstairs. I walked my friends out, and one of my friends called my name from the north gate because she left something inside. So I just cut across the grass. Well, the minute that I stepped foot on the grass, the light, I mean, I'll never forget these spotlights coming up and Secret Service, uniformed Secret Service agents and guards coming over a megaphone telling me to get down on the ground. I literally had to get down on all fours and try to go through this whole process, but I was scared out of my mind. I didn't know what had just happened. So yeah, that was, that was quite the ordeal, but I survived and I got back in the White House after a clearance procedure that took about 30 minutes.
Wow. So as you moved into adulthood, you had some things to reckon with, you point out in Troublemaker. I mean, you fell out of love with golf, you realized you were attracted to women, and you had some body issues. How rough did those get?
Yeah, I think a lot of young people go through it, especially these image body issues, young women. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have talked to me about their own issues that they've been through. And it was very cathartic to write about it in the book and to really open up about some of those issues that I was dealing with and going to therapy and then going to group therapy. It was hard for me back then. I didn't even tell my parents about it. I was not open about anything that was going on in my life in terms of my eating disorder or my sexuality. I always wanted to be this sort of all-American kid that did everything right. As I say in the book, I got to the point where I craved those pats on the back and the pats on the head and people telling me how great I was doing and we're so proud of you. And I knew with those issues that I was having that there's no way anybody was going to be proud of me. That wasn't anything to be proud of back then. And I mean, certainly with an eating disorder, I don't think that you're proud of it now, but what I am proud of is the work that I did to get better and to understand it and to appreciate where I was and to respect myself and to say, you know, it's okay. It's okay to have these issues. It's okay to have a mental health problems going on. The most important thing is to be able to talk about it, to seek help, and to try to understand it and figure yourself out in the process. And I think that, you know, going through therapy and having the eating disorder and figuring out my sexuality all led me to this path where I am today. And I think that I have a much clearer picture because of all of those things.
So you did go into broadcast news and worked at some local stations. I could definitely relate to the nerves on live shots. I still remember people I was interviewing had twitchy smiles plastered on their faces, and I realized I did too. How did you get the yips under control? They sound like they were fairly significant in the early going.
They were, and I don't really know. I mean, I remember the worst of it was when I was in Cincinnati, and there was a stretch where I really felt like I was hyperventilating. I felt like that I couldn't breathe. And the only thing that makes sense to me now that I think that I got better was talking to somebody who worked in television about it. And for some reason, it was kind of like with the eating disorder. Once I let go of the secrecy, it improved. Now, it didn't go away entirely. I still battled it. And it, as I mentioned, it came back when I got to Golf Channel. And it's scary because in that moment, all you can think about is looking like an absolute idiot on live TV. As you know, I mean, anybody who's been through it, it is so terrifying. And so I never went on air where I didn't think, is tonight going to be the night where I absolutely just embarrass myself and everyone's talking about my anxiety? Thankfully, it never happened, but there were some close calls. I don't deal with it. I didn't deal with it later in the Golf Channel, like I did early on. And I don't deal with it now when I do any sort of on-air work, but it never goes away. That fear of it could it happen today. So yeah, I just think talking about it, like with anything, just sort of letting go of the secrecy, and it sort of lost its power with me.
Yeah. I can tell you too, that if you get too relaxed in broadcasting, that's also when you make a mistake.
Amen.
Absolutely. Lisa Cornwell's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Troublemaker, a memoir of sexism, retaliation, and the fight they didn't see coming. Well, I should point out that, by the way, her father's cousin, Bill Clinton, Hillary Rodham Clinton, provides the foreword to the book. So, yeah, definitely some star power in the book from Lisa herself. We'll come back and talk more with Lisa Cornwell on the Jefferson Exchange in about 2 minutes. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. We're talking to Lisa Cornwell, who spent quite a few years at the Golf Channel reporting on golf. She's also a golfer herself, a four-time Arkansas women's state golf champion, really came into covering the sport with a lot of energy and enthusiasm and got good grades for it and good reviews at work at the Golf Channel. And then ran into trouble with her bosses. And that's the story she tells in the book Troublemaker, a memoir of sexism, retaliation, and the fight they didn't see coming. So when you decided to move away from typical sports broadcasting, you did end up getting this offer from the Golf Channel. And you tell us in the book that you hesitated at first. Why?
Well, I had started to play golf again. And as you know, because you've read the book, I went through this long period in my life where I called it a divorce from golf. So all I wanted to do as a kid and a young adult was play professional golf. And when I realized that the passion and the drive had gone away, it was devastating for me. I mean, I went through bouts of depression. It was really difficult because I had no idea what in the world I would do after that. I was extremely lost. And so it was that search for, okay, what is next? What am I doing? And then when I started to play again later in my 20s with my friends back in Little Rock when I moved back to Arkansas, I really found this love again for the game, not the way that I had before. I didn't have this competitive desire. I didn't want to play professionally, but I just enjoyed going out there. And I thought, if I'm covering golf every day, am I going to hate the sport again? So I was really torn, and it just took me a few days to sort of get with it mentally. And I realized that, you know, this was a job where I could really establish myself and I could go in with a lot of credibility where I hadn't had it before, even though I had, you know, worked in my career as a sports journalist, sports broadcaster, and built it up that way. With golf, I also had credibility in the sport. So It was honestly a no-brainer. I just needed some time to process it and make sure mentally I was okay with it. And when I got there, then we jumped all over it.
So, Lisa, how soon after you arrived at Golf Channel did you feel like you'd been thrust into a boys' club?
I recognized it pretty soon. And I will say, I mean, I had been around in the media some of those boys' clubs before, and it was okay. I mean, even though I saw bits and pieces of it at Golf Channel, it certainly wasn't anything that had me concerned about my job or the future or anything like that. I thought that, okay, this is just another small situation that will have to be dealt with. But then these things kept happening and they kept building, and I was starting to pay closer attention. And that's when, you know, a few years into the job, that it became an everyday, I wouldn't say an issue, but every day I went into work thinking, what's going to happen today? And not necessarily with me. It could have been with other people there. What are they going to have to deal with? You know, am I going to have to step in? It's just a simple way of treating people and the lack of respect that certain groups got. And it stood out pretty quickly, but once I started speaking out against it and standing up to it, that's when it got worse really fast.
You it's not just men. You call out a couple of women executives in the book by name too. How did they contribute to the situation?
Well, look, the person at the top, the executive producer, which in the production side where I lived, she was the big boss. She made all the decisions. The buck literally stopped with her. I mean, there was the president of Golf Channel, but he wasn't involved in day-to-day operations. So yeah, it's not just men. In fact, I call Molly Solomon the biggest disappointment of my professional career. You think having a woman in there will make it better, that she will say, look, we're not going to tolerate any of this stuff. I thought that it was almost a guarantee, when in fact, she was the person turning her head to all of it. She didn't want to deal with it. And I think quite possibly because she wanted to be part of that boys club. I mean, that's how NBC has sort of raised its employees through the years, that you fall in line with the culture. And I think that that's why she allowed all of these different things to happen. Again, I go back to the story of my friend, my young friend, who was called out and screamed and cussed at. And she literally was the person saying, no, he doesn't have to apologize, he's going back on air. I mean, it to this day, it still blows my mind. And that's why in the book, I did want to name names. Because if you participate in that and you allow these things to happen, then you should get called out for it publicly. Somebody has to do something to try to help make this better and to right some wrongs. And that's the only way that I knew to do it.
Well, one of the names you mentioned, too, is Brandel Chamblee, who gets his own chapter, then a good bit of ink outside of that one, too, and not for good reasons. I mean, and this is a major host at the Golf Channel. Reading some of the things he said and did, you said 80s, I was thinking 50s, but this is ancient world stuff. I mean, was he too big a star for the Golf Channel to bust?
It sounds like it. I mean, and these issues continue. I could write a whole book on the things that have happened. And look, these run-ins that he's had aren't just with me. I have talked to a lot of folks who have worked closely with Brandel over the years. And there have been screaming matches, just the stories of his ego getting in the way of good, productive working relationships. I mean, people have left their positions because they just can't work with him. So I don't know. I don't understand how people like that are not only allowed to stay at the network, but his role has only risen. I can only imagine, you know, what his salary's gone to over the years. And this is a person who from day one has been the most controversial figure at Golf Channel. I mean, he survived calling Tiger a cheater. He survived these run-ins with employees. He survived this book. I talked about the story about him and another host at Golf Channel having who has the best breasts on the LPGA Tour contest while at work. And this is a man who still regularly covers the LPGA Tour. I can't believe that in this day and age it is allowed to happen, but it is. I mean, and it's all right there laid out in the book for people to read. So, and look, if you follow what he says on social media and what people say back to some of the wild analyst statements that he makes, I mean, he's like the Skip Bayless of Golf Channel or the Stephen A. Smith. I mean, he loves controversy, and the more people hate him, the more he loves it. So I'm sure he loves my chapter.
No doubt. Lisa Cornwell's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Troublemaker, a memoir of sexism, retaliation, and the fight they didn't see coming. You fell in love with a golfer, Sarah Kemp. You told your bosses, and they were fine with it until they weren't. What happened when you posted a Facebook picture of you two together in Thailand?
Yeah, it's probably the worst story in terms of the legal perspective that's in the book. Sarah, she plays on the LPGA Tour now, and she had in the past, but at the time when we met, she was playing on the Ladies European Tour, and I had never covered the Ladies European Tour, so there was no conflict of interest. So I was forthcoming about her status on the LET, and she would occasionally play at an LPGA tournament because we had actually had, and it had been recent, there was a reporter who ended up dating and then marrying Sergio Garcia. And because of that relationship and her not disclosing it, she was let go. Her contract was not renewed when it came up at the end of the year. So I didn't want the same thing to happen to me. So I just, full disclosure, told them everything. Well, when I posted the photo with Sarah and you click on her profile, like we all do, you have all your different jobs on there when you kind of work contract work like we do. And she had works at Ladies European Tour, works at the Australian Professional Golf Tour, and works at LPGA. So somebody at Golf Channel saw me works at LPGA and thought that it was another situation where I was dating an LPGA player and hadn't disclosed it. What they didn't know was that I had disclosed it. So I guess after the gossip ran around the newsroom, my day-to-day boss went to Molly and her husband, and that's another issue that we address in the book in terms of nepotism, how closely those two work together, Molly and Jeff, husband and wife, that they were told that I wasn't honest about Sarah's LPGA status, and so they approved these people removing me from the season-ending tour championship. And everybody at the network basically knew that I had been removed from this tournament because of this issue with Sarah. When I pointed out to them that they were wrong in their assumptions and that she had full-time status on the Ladies European Tour, not the LPGA, where she only occasionally got into tournaments, they had to reverse it and put me back on the event. It's hard to fully tell the story in a short amount of time, but there are so many different layers to it. But the way they handled it, I can't imagine how many different aspects of employment law it violated. And I say this to this day, Jeffrey, that's when I should have called a lawyer. I should have called a lawyer that day because there were so many different issues taking place with this one relationship in my life that was very close and personal to me. But all of a sudden, now everyone at the network knows that I'm dating Sarah. I hadn't revealed my sexuality. I'm a pretty private person. And it became office gossip. And looking back, if I have a regret, it's not calling a lawyer when that happened.
You also point out in the book you didn't want to go directly to HR at the Golf Channel as things got worse. So you ended up going to NBC Compliance, I guess. And what happened there?
Well, as someone who had never been to HR other than health insurance and, you know, time off, I really didn't understand the dynamics of how HR and compliance and all those different departments worked. But after witnessing firsthand how badly Golf Channel's HR department handled my friend's case when she was called any trained monkey, I knew that there was no way I trusted them. There was no way, because I wasn't trying to get an investigation. It was a contract year for me. I could already see the writing on the wall. I knew that they were reducing my assignment, so I just wanted this stuff documented. So instead of going to Golf Channel HR, I went to NBC Compliance, where the head compliance officer, Susanna Zwirling, told me on our initial conversation that all of this would remain private. It would not get back to Golf Channel. And then 3 weeks later, it ends up getting back to Molly Solomon and the Golf Channel HR department. And oh, by the way, 9 months later, conveniently, I was demoted for budgetary reasons. I was demoted from a full-time employee to a part-time employee 9 months after the first call to Susanna Zwirling. So it's proof that retaliation is real. I mean, I get why they're concerned about speaking out. I don't regret speaking out. I don't regret what happened. But I do tell people that there are risks involved. And even in this day and age, it will still happen. It can still happen. I'm living, breathing proof of it.
So you got the story out once your contract had completely lapsed with NBC Universal through the Golf Channel. Talk about the aftermath. I mean, first of all, do you have any confidence that things have changed behind you at the Golf Channel?
Well, I do. In fact, I didn't know until a couple weeks ago, a woman who I worked with at Golf Channel, and she still works at Golf Channel. She had just finished the book, and she sent me the most wonderful message. First of all, how proud she was, thanked me for speaking out, but said, you know, because you spoke out, and she said specifically because you called some of these people out, she said things are getting better. She said, I can tell by the way that men talk to women in the office that it's completely different, that their hiring practices are different. She said, we still have work to do, but it is getting better. And look, that matters to me. That was one of the best texts that I've received since all of this happened, because you want it to have a purpose. You want it to have a positive outcome. And for her to be able to say that to me, you know, it put a smile on my face. And I hope that things continue to get better. But, you know, like I've learned, you can probably tell that I'm in my car. I'm on my way to do an event for the PGA Tour. I work play-by-play broadcasting now for the PGA Tour. And I can tell you that these kinds of issues would never happen at PGA Tour Entertainment, because the people at the top, they are good and decent human beings. They don't let egos and bad attitudes come in the door. They treat everybody fairly. They treat everybody equally. They don't care if you're running cable or if you're on air. You're going to get treated with the exact same respect, and that's how it should be. So it's really opened my eyes. You know, you think that it's such a challenge to try to make these things better and to change them. But the truth is, if you have the right people in charge, these issues won't happen because the people underneath you will understand that it's not tolerated. And that's the risk that you take if you want to work there and behave that way, that there's a great potential that you'll lose your job. And that's pretty much how it is at the PGA Tour in the entertainment division. They don't put up with it, and the culture's fantastic.
Lisa Cornwell is the author with Tucker Booth of Troublemaker, a memoir of sexism, retaliation, and the fight they didn't see coming. Lisa, thanks for the book, and thanks for sharing it with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
I appreciate you having me, Jeffrey. Thanks a lot.
And that's it for today's Exchange. Check us out online at jeffexchange.org. All of our interviews get archived there. I'm Jeffrey Riley. From all of us at JPR, have a great day.